Please interrupt me if you have some questions, because it's a school, so you should ask quite a lot. And I'm coming from the biology field, so I try to avoid all kinds of functions as far as possible. The topic is how we can compare proteins and their interaction properties. But for this, of course, we need some some analysis. But here I want to present the PIPSA tool, Protein Interaction Property Similarity Analysis. And as you already heard from Olga, this is belonging to Sycamore, or is now part of Sycamore for estimating parameters missing in your model. PIPSA is also a standalone tool for comparing proteins, but later I will say more about this. My talk, I want to put into different parts. First, basic introduction into protein structures and what are molecular interaction fields, what are electrostatic potentials, how you can calculate them. Then the PIPSA tool itself, then the web version of PIPSA, some visualization of electrostatic potentials, and the quantitative PIPSA, and later on in the computer pool, the tutorial with some examples. First, we are dealing here with proteins, so coming from a sequence and having a 3D structure, and those proteins are interacting in the cell, and we heard already about such pathways and large network of interactions. The dimensions are here for the molecules around between 1 and 10 nanometers. For practical reasons, we are working here with angstroms. So one angstrom is 0.1 nanometers. And going up the pathway, it becomes more and more complex, and the dimensions are larger and larger. But all the proteins are in this range. And the proteins are, you know already, of course, from your lectures, of 20 different amino acids with different properties like charges, hydrophobicity, and so on. And they are linked and can form different structures. And here I want to especially deal with the property of electrostatic charges. Here for the, for instance, the acid amino acids or the basic amino acids. Per convention, the negatively charged residues are called acidic amino acids and are colored in red. Also, you're showing such electrostatic potential. Also, this is negatively charged, and the positively charged residues are like arginine or histidine, lysine, are colored in blue. So we have a static, we think often when we see proteins as a static part with a scaffold, but we can have different point of views how to deal with proteins. We can look to the surface and also to the electrostatic potentials, this one property. This reflects maybe more the flexibility of the proteins. So we can have different levels of how to deal with such proteins. So we can compare the properties like in normal chemistry. We can calculate the mass, the isoelectric points, the charge. We can use fingerprints, often used in bioinformatics. Then we can use, as we heard yesterday, aminer asset sequences for sequence alignment and prediction of motifs, binding motifs, for instance. Then we come to the 3D part. There we have different techniques like crystallography, NMR, so nuclear magnetic resonance spectroscopy, also for large molecules, for large proteins or complexes, we can use electron microscopy. Then we want to analyze also the interactions to other proteins, protein DNA, protein ligands, like for, we want to develop a drug. We want to get a relationship between the protein structure and the functionality. For this, we can use the quantitative structure analyze research, often used for finding better binding compounds. We can use the molecular interaction fields, shortly MIFs, MIF. What you hear, for example, electrostatic potential. So, especially in our group, we are dealing with different kinds of analyzing. Yeah, so, we're focusing on small molecules, proteins, nucleic acids, and analyze the stability, folding, the catalytic reaction, electron transfer. So, if you think of quantum chemistry, and the, several fields of life science are belonging to this. Physics-based, bio and chemical informatics. And so we can use individual proteins and go into very deep in the understanding of this protein. But you can use, like in this system biology network, in the context, and we can compare across protein families. But what is now a molecular interaction field? One I already presented, this electrostatic potential. And here on one side we have the protein and maybe another protein or a substrate or a drug, a ligand is binding to this protein. Not necessarily in the active site, but normally mostly we are focusing on the active site. So the region where the reaction is catalyzed. And we can compare those interactions. We can calculate, for instance, the van der Waals or electrostatic interactions between the different atoms, between the different residues. But we can also look just on the protein side and compare the electrostatic potential. We can use the hydrophobicity and so on, the charge distribution in general. The shape is can be one molecular interaction field. And by comparison of this, maybe we can estimate the speed of the reaction, or in general, what this protein is doing. So this is, for instance, one example where the shape complementarity is important. This is maybe you know from the wet lab, working at the lab bench. This is used in for biotin, streptavidin complex is biotin. This is a very tight binding molecule, which you can use for labeling of proteins.
Excuse me, maybe just a short comment in Russian. Все ли понятно? То есть вот здесь введение в структуру белка, что белки – это ковалентно связанный набор аминокислот, 20 аминокислот, каждая аминокислота обладает зарядом и так далее. Вот, и свойство, такое свойство, как заряд, очень важное для распознавания белок-белковых, для формирования белок-белковых комплексов. И вот здесь вот говорится о том, что еще... Ну, я думаю, что тут по картинкам все понятно, не буду комментировать. Хорошо? Если есть вопросы, пожалуйста, спрашивайте. Окей.
For this shape complementarity, the Lennard-Jones or van der Waals interactions are important, and this can be described by such a function where you have a large repulsion energy if they are coming too close together, but if the two atoms are quite far from each other, there's some attraction, but it's very distant dependent, so we have here just short range interactions and can be described as this function mostly empirical determined, but here you have the distance between the different atoms. So we have van der Waals excluded volume repulsion, London dispersion-induced dipole attractions, where the electrons are affecting each other. But the most the take-home messages from the Lennard-Jones and the van der Waals interactions are that they are short-range interactions, so just around they're affected just around 8 to 10 angstrom. A long-range interaction we can see here. That's now, here we can see, for instance, the hydrogen bonds between nitrogen and the oxygen. This is, again, our ligand. And you see some nicely hydrogen bonds are formed. So we have electrostatic complementarity. And for this, we can use Coulomb's law, described by this. And if you use biomolecule units, we heard about standardization of units and so on, we can use the simple formula that you have the electron charge and the radius is important. And for we are not working in vacuum, so we have to also to use the dielectric constant for describing this. And this is in water or with salt, and so this is weakening this interaction between the two atoms. So we have to introduce the permittivity of free space and the relative dielectric constant of the surrounding medium. But the important point is we have here a long-range interaction, so we have no real cut-off like we saw for the van der Waals interactions. And so the electrostatic interaction is important that molecules find each other. The exact position then often the van der Waals interaction is very important. But this electrostatic interaction we want to use now for the similarity analysis of proteins. But first, some parameters influencing the calculation of the electrostatic interactions. So we have on the one hand for large molecules, rigid molecules, not rigid molecules, but where the atoms cannot move so far, there we have electronic polarization that the electrons and the nucleus are moving a little bit. On the other hand, we have for smaller molecules like water molecules orientational polarization. The water molecules, for instance, are highly polarized, coming from the negative charged oxygen and the more positively charged hydrogen, so they can rotate, they can float around and can build such hydrogen bonds. Of course, you know this. So we have for describing both situations, we have different dielectric constants, like here very low for proteins and very high for water. And as you remember here, this is influencing the electrostatic field. So we have to, if we want to simulate such an electrostatic interaction, we have to keep this into account. But the dielectric constant is a macroscopic property. But nevertheless, we can apply it for simulations. So for molecules or part of molecules, we can use it for small molecules. Like the protein itself and the surrounding medium, water and ions are affecting this, as I mentioned, for macromolecules, there's a difference maybe inside of the protein or going outside to the outer part of the protein. And we have a non-uniform dielectric constant. So we have to define some dielectric boundaries for this measuring. Are there some questions about this?
Yeah. Все ли понятно?
One question. What program did you use for visualization of ligand protein interactions?
It depends on what I will show later. Some examples how to you can visualize it. For instance, electrostatic potentials. You can use a lot of tools like Pymol, Chimera, and so. I will later show some examples. And also, Pymol and Chimera we use in the tutorial, so you can practice and play around with this.
For your presentation, you use what type for your pictures? What type of program you use? Pymol.
In this case, this is Pymol, and here is this. Where do we have it? This is, I guess, Chimera, but you can use also Pymol. It's possible, or a lot of graphical Mo. Schrödinger, there are a lot of commercial available tools, but open programs
okay.
But you can, this is, I think, a topic we can discuss good in the tutorial and can give you some links where you can download such programs.
Okay. Это Pymol в данном случае и Химера. Вот как раз вы с ними будете работать сегодня на семинаре. Они свободно загружаются, есть для Linux и для Windows. Их, в принципе, никаких проблем не составляет скачать из интернета и поставить на компьютер. Но еще есть много других, в принципе. То есть это надо просто посмотреть. Окей, okay. Any more questions? Okay.
You assume your dielectric constant for the surrounding medium is, for instance...
My question is, what do you do when you've got some small kind of grooves or bubbles in the docking that are filled with solvents and where it is, there are very small on few angstroms and there are important individual molecules like salt bridges with... interaction with the solvent.
In this case, we are using, for instance, UHPD or APBS is doing similar. Then the solvent is implicit, but of course, for MD simulations, and so you can use explicit solvent molecules running your calculations in a water box, for instance.
This is okay. Еще вопросы по этой части. Okay, let's go further.
So we have a non-uniform dielectric field around. with this distortions about of the protein, and such a focusing we can have here when the positive charge is on the proteins, and we have such a electrostatic potential. We can use the linearized Poisson-Boltzmann equation. I don't want to go in this detail. I think some of you more know more about this than me. I'm not a physics, I have to admit. You can use, you can try to solve this as an analytic solution, but it's quite difficult for it's just possible for simple geometries, but proteins are very difficult to handle in this case. Of course, they are not have not a uniform shape. But we can use, we are using here a numerical solution on a grid. So we have to we analyze for all the grid points and use a boundary between the protein and the dielectric constant there and then outside. So we need to assign the atomic radii and the charges. For this we can use normal force fields like in charm or amber. Then to parameterize this, then the, as I mentioned, it's done on a grid. So we have to define the grid size that our complex system is really fitting into the this box. What we that all parts are covered by the grid. The grid spacing is important for such interactions. What we are looking here is one angstrom is often enough. But if you want to go deeper into into details, then you can reduce the grid spacing. But of course, it needs more computer power. But this is normally not the problem. You have to define so your dielectric boundary between the protein and the surrounding medium. You can use the van der Waals surface, the molecular surface, whatever. You can use the solvent accessible surface. But all the parameters in the workflow of PIPSA, what I show later, these are predefined settings. But for some cases, you have to consider all the parameters, and you have to think about it and adapt to your system. Then you can visualize your electrostatic potentials, and actually. I copied those slides from colleagues of mine, so I don't know exactly how they visualized, but I think Chimera looks so, but doesn't matter. You need a program which can read the grid and show the grid points and maybe as a mesh or a surface. And then you can see that some molecules that are interacting with each other often have complementary charge distribution. Like here, in red, negatively charged regions, and in blue, positively charged regions. And you see here in the area where they interact, show electrostatic complementarity. And this can, if you compare different systems and so on, and you use, for instance, for Brownian molecular calculations, you can estimate also the some kinetic parameters. I don't want to go into Brownian simulations, That's another topic, one field of our group. Here another example where you have the protein and an inhibitor, BASTA and binase, and based on this electrostatic complementarity, you can calculate some kinetic constants. Here we see an example in gray, the surface of the protein, and in blue the positively charged electrostatic regions, and in red here around the active, actually we have two active sites. Here for instance it's negatively charged, but for this we have to think about what is at what pH, at what solvent concentration we are working on, because if you remember the dielectric constant, this is depending on the also not on the not just on the water, also on ions and what else we have in the surrounding medium, and yeah, this is important to use the kinetic data, maybe also from real experiments. And here it's an example how this is changing if you change the pH of your of your medium. And these are related proteins from some related proteins, and they show another charge distribution. For calculating the electrostatic potentials using the Poisson-Boltzmann equation, there are many tools available, but these are more or less for academic. I think they are free for academic. One is UHPD, and the other one is APBS. There's also a nice interface for using with PIMOL, where you can use your protein structure and calculate the electrostatic potential and visualize this into PIMOL. But other tools like Delphi and so on, commercial programs are also doing this job. First, I thought to give a short presentation here of Chimera, but I haven't connected my computer, so we move this to the tutorial. So everybody is invited to come to the tutorial for seeing more about Chimera and PIMOL also. But for what we can use, can we use electrostatic potentials?
Сегодня? Почему они вместе будут? Sorry.
One example is, in principle, you can use electrostatic potential also for superimposed molecules. You can, depending on the charge distribution, you can rotate them. Normally, you use either the sequence alignment or the secondary structure and so on. But sometimes the charge distribution show more the homology between different proteins, and of course lead to another superimposition than the superimposition by the backbone, for instance. Another possibility for calculating molecular interaction fields, so going apart from electrostatic potential, we can use can calculate other molecular interaction fields using, for instance, the program GRID. It's not related to what you heard yesterday about GRID computing, about worldwide computer network and so on, but GRID is a program where you use your protein and calculate on a grid. For each grid point, you put a probe, maybe a carbon, an oxygen, or so with the property, and calculate the interaction energy. between of this probe at this point. So you get a relation between the probe and your protein, and this you do for every grid point. And you can use different probes, so you get different molecular interaction fields. You can, for with this method, you can detect hydrophobicity, for instance. You can use also multi-atom probes if you have a carboxy acid, and use for every grid point. What you get then is a potential. So for each grid point, here shown now is a chicken wire using water moving from grid point to grid point, and now you can see where water can bind. You can use it also for hydrophobicity, for different kind of interactions. That's here, by the way, that's dihydrofolate reductase. Calculated it for here, for instance, you see the CO, the carboxy acid, and this gives you information about your protein. Where very interesting for if you want to find new ligands binding to your active site, and you want to design them. Normally, doing in industry for finding new drugs, and so you can see which functional group should be at which position. And if you superimpose also, it gives a profile of your protein. You can also use such molecular action fields and compare those fields between different proteins. And this, for this, in our group, PIPSA, so Protein Interaction Property Similarity Analysis, was developed. This is for classification of proteins in protein family by interaction proteins properties, detection of regions of similarity and dissimilarity in molecular interaction fields. So normally we are focusing on electrostatic potentials, but as you see, other properties are possible. And correlate those molecular interaction fields with their functional parameters, detecting kinetic parameters, and their interaction properties. What you need is superimposed protein structures, normally homolog proteins. I don't want to go into detail with this superimposition by the electrostatic similarity, but we use similar proteins, maybe proteins from different species with mutations and so on, and to analyze their similarity. And the basic idea of PIPSA is quite simple. You have your protein calculate, as you have seen, you calculate your interaction, your molecular interaction field, and now of course you have to superimpose both, as I mentioned, and then you can compare each corresponding grid point between the two grids, the two fields. At the beginning, this was done for small molecules. Here you can see a bunch of similar or dissimilar proteins. Of course, you can easily see the benzoyl ring is the similar part, but for drugs it's important. What is the difference in the functional group? You can calculate the hydrogen bond acceptor potential, the donor potential, and the shape, and now you can compare this. This is typically implemented in comparative molecular field analysis or similarity index analysis, and you find a lot of QSAR methods, a lot of papers dealing with this. For calculating the similarity index between the different grid points, of course, you can use several mathematical equations to calculate similarity distances and so on. The simple one, you know, is of course Euclidean distance, where you can use the property A minus property B and then the square and square root of the most, or Tanimoto is often used for small molecules. But here we are normally dealing with Hodgkin and Karbo similarity indices. The difference is that you take here the square root and here not. From this similarity indices, what we get after summing up all the corresponding grid points, we can use electrostatic distance with this formula, or 2 minus 2 similarity index under the root. And in PIPSA, this is important. So here you can see. But we don't compare all grid points. We are don't consider about the grid points laying inside the protein, because the electrostatic potential is not useful. This is for this purpose here of comparing different proteins. And we don't use normally the grid points in a around three angstrom apart from the molecular surface of the protein. This you can change, and for certain reasons, maybe you want to lower or higher this radius. But we use a so-called skin, a certain region of three angstrom away from the molecular surface, and with a thickness of 4 angstrom. So we compare all those grid points in this skin and get a similarity index between 1 and minus 1. So 1 for totally similar and minus 1 for anticorrelated, and 0 for non-correlated.
Все ли понятно, как работает система? Вокруг белка строится такая решетка, да, грид, видели, да, на картинке, и по ней прогоняется, вот в каждой точке этой решетки вычисляется некое физико-химическое свойство, вот, которое было подсказано раньше. Это может быть проба какая-то гоняться, там, ну, в зависимости от белка. Затем вот все точки этой решетки могут быть сравнены между собой. Меры сравнения были вот на той картинке, на эти четыре там большие формулы. Допустим, вот по всем физико-химическим свойствам берется точка и вычисляется там разность величин разных свойств проб, которые в этой точке были помещены. Это вот Евклидово расстояние. Там были куча других расстояний. И одна из мер была, это вот S-similarity index, если я правильно понял. Это вот вокруг белка строится вот такая оболочка на разных расстояниях 3 анстрема и 4 анстрема. И для них вычисляется вот по этой формуле сходство. Если вот эти оболочки вокруг белка похожи между собой, вот здесь картинка показана, по физико-химическим свойствам, красное, значит, одно свойство, а синее другое, то они между собой коррелируют, величина близка к единице. Если свойство антикоррелирует, допустим, отрицательный заряд, положительный заряд, то эта величина этого свойства, S этого, она близка к минус единице. Видите, синенький, красненький. А если нет никакого сходства, ни антикорреляции, то она, ну, белки никак не похожи. Кто-то, может быть, добавит? Статическая, да. То есть берутся вокруг двух белков, строится решетка, и затем уже сравниваются. Они пока не взаимодействуют, да. Окей.
Some more questions?
Yeah.
What why you use 3 angstrom and 4 angstrom sigma? Why don't you use, for example, 5 angstrom? What is it?
You can change it depending on your simulation, what you want to compare. Often you have a certain, if you want to, these are values I think find by looking to the and here it's for comparing different homolog proteins with the same scaffold, and often the side chains are not well defined. Well, they are flexible, of course. And so if you would go too close to the molecular surface, you this, of course, the flexibility affects the molecular surface. So then the error coming from the uncertainty of the positions of the side chains would affect the similarity index. And of course, you can make also the skin figure. It's also can be also quite useful. For instance, if you have a very narrow active site, quite similar, then you with good defined side chains, you can, want to reduce it maybe to one angstrom. And I think in the WebPipsa workflow, it's, there is a 2 angstrom implemented. I'll show later. Then maybe the active site is too close that you have to reduce it, otherwise you have not enough grid points what you compare. Because one thing I forgotten to say here, you can also compare not the whole skin, you can also take a part of this, like here a cone, or you can use a sphere around a center and compare all those grid points. So you can really focus on the active site or such other binding sites.
Okay. Немножко поясню. Вопрос был заключался в следующем. Почему взята толщина этой шкуры вокруг белка 4 и 3 ангстрема? В принципе, это можно менять. А идея этой шкуры заключается в следующем, что если у белка боковые группы, на которые находятся на поверхности, они очень сильно могут колебаться. То есть вот структура поверхности белка, боковых групп, она очень неточная. Поэтому если вы сравниваете их позиции непосредственно между собой, то у вас получается, вы можете что-то потерять. Поэтому вот такая оболочка взята, которая учитывает то, что в пределах вот этих вот расстояний боковая группа может так вот крутиться слабенько, но тем не менее позиция ее может быть неточной. И вот, собственно говоря, идея этой шкуры. Но вообще подразумевается, что вот действительно сравниваются, собственно говоря, не белки, а вот это вот их решеточное представление. То есть есть решетка, в каждом узле решетки берется некий пробный атом, да, и вычисляется некий потенциал, там гидрофобный, заряд и так далее. И вот для всех наборов этих потенциалов сравниваются не белки, а вот эти вот молекулярные поля, грубо говоря. Вот в этом смысл этого подхода. То есть сравниваются молекулярные поля вокруг, потенциальные поля вокруг этого белка. Окей.
And then you get a similarity index over the sum of all compared corresponding good points. And if you do it for a lot of proteins and calculate the similarity index between each pair of those proteins, you can calculate such trees. Of course, these are not calculated on this PIPSA analysis, but you had already heard about trees and so on. Normally, we use here an unrooted tree. This is what you get also if you use the web PIPSA, so the internet version, because unrooted tree is better to analyze, because you compare each protein pair. But if you use the rooted tree, it's depending on the order of the protein. So it's changing. If you change the root, you get another feeling about the similarity between different proteins. And this is sometimes misleading. So here it's better to see B and C is further apart than maybe D and C and so on.
Окей, okay, some comments. Если у вас есть некое мера сходства между белками, ну или между вот этими потенциальными полями, вы можете построить между ними, посчитать их расстояние, на основе этих расстояний построить дерево классификации этих белков. В некоторых случаях удобно использовать дерево, без, где положение точного корня, вот видите вверху, в верхушке, оно не определено, потому что если вы где-то зафиксируете корень этого дерева, то у вас картинка классификации белков может поменяться. И вот в этом случае они предлагают не использовать точное положение корня, поскольку здесь сходство вещь относительная, и в этом случае вы точно гарантируете, что у вас никакой информации дополнительной, которую вы по положению корня лишней не внесли, вы видите только вот действительно относительное сходство этих потенциалов.
The distance is the similarity index between each protein-protein pair. Mm-hmm. And this gives you one number. And if you do it for all protein-protein pairs, you can class it. You can Phillip tree, for instance.
The tree...
Not evolution. Вопрос был о том, не имеется ли в виду эволюционное дерево, поскольку деревья очень похожи на дерево эволюции, да? Да. Это просто это картинка, аналогия, да. На самом деле в качестве расстояния используются вот это вот те четыре формулы, да, расстояний Евклидова между этими вот потенциалами, решетками. И в этом смысле как бы никакого отношения к эволюции это не имеет. Хотя, может быть, что это...
So you clusterize proteins, yes? And how you a cluster is a single node or it has a topology?
That's done with the program R. And there's, I think it's I'm not really involved in this graph theory.
The node of your tree is one single protein.
This is one protein. So we have four
вершина дерева – это отдельные белки. Внутренний узел – это группы белков. Еще вопросы, пожалуйста. Это зависит от алгоритма на самом деле, и можно всегда найти алгоритм, который минимизирует эти расстояния. То есть там способ построения, я вот так могу сказать, что сейчас это в принципе не важно. То есть, скорее всего, это здесь вот какой-нибудь Nebbia-Jones применяется. Или ПГМА с корнем дает расстояние дерева, а Nebbia-Jones без корня. То есть, в принципе, метод построения дерева здесь не так важен. Просто здесь идея, что вы можете понять, какие белки группируются с какими белками по свойству вот этого потенциала. Окей.
What next? This is with the Tweezers cluster representation. You can also use different kind of clustering. Whatever you can do with your matrix between the protein pairs. But what you can see here, for instance, with such an unrooted tree, based on the PIPSA analysis of electrostatic potentials, and here can some representative molecules. You see here electrostatic negative, so the negatively charged, positively charged, and based on the tree, you can easily see they are quite unrelated. Here it's not so obvious sometimes if you just look to the electrostatic potentials. You couldn't say really, is this, how unrelated is it, or how similar it is. But in general, of course, you can use different methods for this clustering. And another representation is such a heat map, where you use the different proteins. So here, homology models based on one template for different species. Also, again, dihydrofolate reductase. And for each point, you have a similarity index. Sorry, this is, of course, red is, red is one, and so totally correlated, of course, each, if you compare it with itself, it's one, and blue is minus one, so all of them are quite correlated, but you can see here, like for the mammalians, they're more related, looking to the whole protein electrostatic potential than compared to a plant or E. coli. And this is a similar representation you get from your also with RepPipSa as a result.
Okay, one question. Is it for all proteins of these genomes or for some single protein from different genomes, this map?
I will show it later and also especially in the tutorial. You take a starting sequence and the correlated sequences of the same protein in different species, and then you build homology models and calculate the electrostatic potential, and then you compare those molecules.
Да, здесь идея следующая, что вот взяли белок дигидрофолат редуктазу из разных организмов, да, вот организмы проведены по осям матрицы, для которых была структура, взяли структуру, для которых не было структуры, построили модели и посчитали для каждой вот этот потенциал статистический, который получился. И, в принципе, вот видно, что между белками из разных видов существует сходство, это красненькие цвета, чем больше сходств потенциалов, тем краснее цвет. Есть некоторые различия, то есть вот кластер Homo sapiens и высших организмов, они вот кластеризуются в серединке, то есть они между собой больше похожи, чем на белки других организмов. Один и тот же белок дигидрофолат-редуктаза, только из разных организмов. То есть здесь вот видно, что в принципе как бы эволюция тоже, можно ее посмотреть.
In this case, I haven't compared it to the evolution. I'll show later another case. But here I compared it with kinetic parameters, KD values for the substrate and the cofactor, energy pH and dihydrofolate. And in the tutorial, I will show how good it is related to the kinetic parameters, and also some problems with this method, especially with the homology model built on one template. And in the tutorial, I will show an example, and I hope that we can also analyze together.
Вопрос был насчет того, как это связано с эволюцией. Ну, вот я могу сказать, что вот заметить, что, в общем-то, действительно, из высших организмов белки более похожи, чем с бактериальными между собой. А примеры взаимосвязи с эволюцией, они будут показаны на туториале и дальше в лекции. Окей. Okay. Any questions? Окей.
Okay. Now, as I mentioned several times, coming to WebPipSa, the recently released version of internet version of WebPipSa, one implemented as you're going to PipSaEML.org as a standalone tool as a with the internet interface, but it's also belonging to Sycamore. So as I showed at the beginning, for estimating some parameters, so it's related to databanks, Zabbio, OK, and Brenda, and as Olga presented already, it's in this, it's also used in this context. The others, Pipsa can also be, is also a standalone tool. You can download it. I'm not really sure about the copyrights and so on, but it's for as far as I know, it's for academic completely free. I don't know about the source code, maybe also. But anyway, you can use it in academia. And where you, with a standalone tool, you have more flexibility about how to define your regions, what you want to compare, so which grid points. You can define the thickness of the skin and how far you want to go from the protein surface. You can use other molecular interaction fields than electrostatic potentials. But here the web pipsa is quite nice. You have superimposed models for calculating the electrostatic potential. Of course, you need the correct charges and often quite difficult for proteins the correct protonation state. But because the protonation state is not normally, you cannot find it in the PDB file, so download it from the protein data bank where all the crystal structures are in. In crystallography, you cannot see normally at this resolution where proteins are solved around between 2 and 3 angstroms, I would say, or maybe 1.5 and 3 angstroms resolution. You cannot see any hydrogens. It's an experimental limitation. It's not a fault of the crystallographer. But they are missing. So we need a method to add the hydrogens. For this, we are using the program WhatIf. It's also, I think, it's free available. And with the protonated protein and also the correct charges, you can calculate the different electrostatic potentials and compare those the corresponding grid points, again using a certain skin around the protein. And as you already saw here, you can cluster them on a with a tree and on a, you can represent this on a matrix. And so you can see here what is which protein is more similar than, to the other one than to the third one, for instance. This is here an example for triose phosphate isomerase. And here...
What is the yellow spheres?
Sorry, this I haven't mentioned. This is the focus region, what I explained, using just one part of the grid points of covered in the skin. So you focus, in this case, compare just those grid points of the skin which are falling in the which are laying within the sphere. You don't collect compare all the proteins. You see here they are often quite similar with the positive charge, but you just compare here within the sphere, and this gives you of course a different similarity. And this you can see also. You see in WebPipsa then for the whole protein and also for the focus region.
Окей, вопрос был в том, что означают желтенькие сферы, да? Я, насколько я понял, это можно сравнивать не только все последовательности по всей структуре белка, а можно сравнивать и частично. И вот здесь сравнение было проведено по вот этой вот именно части белка. То есть, допустим, это какой-нибудь участок, который может содержать активный центр. То есть здесь можно достаточно гибко выбирать какие-то участки белка, которые можно сравнивать и строить по ним дерево, а не только по всем. Окей.
Here's a workflow. We used already existing models or protein structures which are superimposed. The superimposition can also be done by WebPipsa. But now I come to the other workflow, which is implemented in Sycamore for parameter estimation, but also in the PIPSA workflow, web PIPSA workflow. You start with your protein target and look for this this protein target. Maybe you want to get some. You want to estimate the missing kinetic parameters. Then you look into the SwissProt server. For the SwissProt ID, you type in your name, triose isomerase, and you get a SwissProt ID. And this SwissProt ID you put into your interface, and you retrieve from the SwissProt server the IC number, so the enzyme classification number, and all sequences which have the same IC number. This SwissProt ID is related to one enzyme with belonging to one species. But the IC number is related to the enzyme itself. It doesn't care about the species. So you retrieve one EC number, but different sequences for available protein sequences belonging to this EC number. And in addition, it looks for it looks in the protein data bank for crystal structures or models, NMR structures. And you and it gives you it lists you, all available PDB files according to this EC number. But there are many sequences, a lot of belonging to one protein, and this is maybe not what you want. You don't want to have all the related protein sequences, but you want to have just those sequences where already kinetic data are available. And for this, the SwissProt server is sending a request to the kinetic data bank of Zabi, OK, and Brenda. We already heard about those data banks from Olga. And so you retrieve those sequences where kinetic data can be found. And now you have a sequence alignment between your protein, a pairwise sequence alignment between your protein target and also other retrieved sequences. And then you choose a template model, so a 3D model from your PDB where you think it's most similar to the protein target, so to this protein what you want to model. And there's for academic free available tool modeler from the UK. If you want to use this, you won't have to apply for a certain license key, but it's just sending an email and you retrieve a key for this. And then with this key, you can run further the workflow, and based on this template structure from the PDB, you build for all the sequences homology models, what you get here, and then you protonate them and calculate the electrostatic potentials with using UHPD that's embedded in in this workflow. So you need to care about how you can get or how you can install the program. It's running on our server. And what you get is electrostatic potential. You can also download it and visualize it afterwards. But you get also a similarity index between all protein-protein pairs. And then you compare those similarity indices with the kinetic data coming from Sabio, Arkay, from Brenda, or from your literature, from your experiments, so what you have run. And then, based on this, you can find this protein A is maybe more related than protein B, so I take the parameters from molecule A, not from B. And this parameter I use then for my protein target and put it into the model, what Olga explained, and then I can can simulate the reaction.
Okay, комментарии. Здесь вот приведена схема, как можно решать задачу взаимосвязи. То есть вот проблема в следующем. Вот есть некие поверхности, да, электропотенциальной энергии, которую вычисляет программа ПИПСа, и теперь ее эту информацию необходимо привязать к кинетическим данным по связыванию белка, двух белков, скажем так. И вот как это делается? Это делается на основе статистического анализа. То есть вот если структура белка известна, то, точнее так, берется белковая последовательность из банка данных SwissProt. Для нее подбираются гомологичные белки, которые имеют один и тот же индекс энзиматической классификации, да? Значит, идет построение множественного уравнения этих белков на основе известной структуры белка template structure, идет моделирование вот этого структуры белка, используется расчет потенциала электростатического вокруг этого белка, рассчитываются индексы сходства. И затем получается, что если таких данных несколько, то мы можем посмотреть вот взаимосвязь между индексами сходства этих поверхностей потенциальных и кинетическими данными для данных белков. И в этом случае мы тогда можем оценить параметры этой взаимосвязи, и по идее можно будет предсказывать, зная вот это вот молекулярное электростатическое поле вокруг белка, можно будет предсказать, взяв другой белок, можно будет предсказать, какая у него будет кинетика связывания. Вот это такая большая цепочка, которая позволяет эти параметры сделать. И она реализована вот в этом сервере. Все понятно, да? Можно следующий двигаться дальше. Okay. Question.
Yeah, if they have the same EC number, they are homology.
No.
Because they are catalyzing the same reaction, they are belonging to the same enzyme class.
But the sequence may be not homology.
But it's very likely that the 3D structure is similar.
Я думаю, что и то, и другое. EC плюс гомология. Понятно, что уровень гомологии должен быть также учитываться. Ну, вопрос понятен, да. He recalled that there are some proteins with different structure but performing the same enzymatic function.
Then they may be misclassified into the same EC number or doing really the same. But I think this is an exception.
Yeah.
Maybe you can use it, this also to detect. But of course, if the electrostatic potentials are too different, if you have one structure going in this way, and it's not covered by, it's corresponding to similar structure, then you have problems of comparing the proteins.
Здесь речь идет о том, что известный случай, так называемых, когда белки, имеющие совершенно разную структуру, могут выполнять одну и ту же каталитическую функцию, потому что активные центры – это очень маленькие участки белков. И, в общем-то, в некоторых случаях такое бывает, что похожие ферментативные функции выполняются белками с разной структурой. И вот проблема в том, что вы можете, выбирая по ИСИ-числу каталогу, выбрать белки с разными структурами. Это бывает очень редко, вот, но в этом случае вы получаете не совсем правильные результаты. И это, в принципе, можно будет уловить по вашим данным. То есть это нужно все-таки контролировать, как я понял. Окей.
But if
so we should control this, in this case we should control the data, yeah?
Sorry?
In this case we should control the data and if we see something unusual, we can...
we can also exclude
some data. Okay.
Otherwise it doesn't hurt if we have, if we have 15 or 20 proteins comparing... it's not so problematic, but this step with just knowing known kinetic data is maybe more important. Otherwise, we would retrieve hundreds of sequences, and then we get into trouble with computer power.
Okay.
But of course, it would be interesting to look at such proteins with same EC number and same function, but different scaffold. And another thing is, of course, this workflow is not working if the protein has no EC number. There are a lot of EC numbers are just for enzymes, so enzyme classification number. If you have a protein which you want to compare without EC number, you can go build your model on your own, maybe using modeler, download modeler, calculate your model, and then calculate the electrostatic potential and compare it. But that's not...
it's your own risk, yeah?
This is also on your own risk, because comparing monetary models, there are a lot of mistakes. And in the tutorial, I show a nice example where, even in the active site... some residues pointing inside the active site based on one template, because here choosing the template structure is important for the models. If you choose another template structure, maybe the same residue would point to the opposite direction. Mm-hmm. And so this affects also the electrostatic potential.
Да, то есть это все-таки это модели компьютерные, которые могут ошибаться. И, например, вот на семинаре будет показано, когда если вы используете разные в качестве шаблона при моделировании белковой структуры разные белки, у вас может оказаться так, что в одном случае боковые группы смотрят внутрь центра активного, а в другом случае наружу, вы получаете совершенно разную картину. То есть это все-таки модели, и к ним надо относиться, значит, с большой долей осторожности. Но вот посмотрим, что будет дальше в лекции. Я думаю, что мы увидим результаты. Окей.
Okay. So one important point is here missing in the whole workflow is related to everything here. It's your brain, and don't switch it off if you want such analysis. Like if you go to your workbench or to run a similar sequence analysis, you should ever keep care on what you should, have to think about what you do, what's your aim, what do you want to calculate, where the data are coming from, because there's a large experimental error inside, the different methods working in a different way, maybe here for instance not the Hodgkin similarity index is useful for your case, maybe carbo or some other distances, whatever. Use every time your brain if you run such. It's not a black box.
Yeah. Okay.
And at the end, just the quantitative PIPSA, but in principle I already explained it. You have your protein and your kinetic weight, and by the similarity to your target protein, you can select here now what is most similar to this, and from this you can estimate the missing parameter. But this we see in the tutorial also, hopefully more. like here an example where the kinetic data are related to the difference in the electrostatic potentials or to the binding affinity. Here, this is an example where you can use it also where the clique compared it to the evolution of the protein here for triose isomerase, and you can see here the relation here, the mammalians, then chicken and frogs, and plants, insects, fish, they're falling in different categories. This is just similarity based on the electrostatic potential. And often, they have then different functions or different locations, of course. And so it can help to understand the evolution, to estimate parameters, can help also in drug design. For instance, if you have homolog proteins like thrombin, trypsin, urokinase, all have cleaving serine proteases with a catalytic triad. You know from textbook, cleaving a peptide bond. Here, thrombin after an arginine, but before a glycine. Trypsin has another motif for the substrate, so for the peptide sequence, which I like to cut. Here's a after the broken peptide bond, this part is not important, not specific. And here, for instance, for urokinase, it cleaves between arginine and valine residues. But even if they have similar secondary structures, you see the scaffold is almost the same. They have totally different functions, like thrombin, you know, for blood clotting. Trypsin is for digestion, and urokinase is an anti-target to thrombin. It's important for the opposite direction, not for blood clotting, but for the fibrinolysis. And you can also look at here to the electrostatic potentials. Here you see the active site with a bound ligand, for example, just to illustrate it, you have different pockets here between the S1 and the S1 pocket and the S1 point pocket. You have here the catalytic triad, you know from the textbook for serine proteases. And this peptide bond will be broken. But the pockets are important for the specificity. Not all peptides or not all drugs should inhibit all proteins. So if you have an inhibitor, it should be specific for thrombin, but not for the anti-target urokinase. And here, the electrostatic potentials are in the same orientation, same like here in this picture. Still the same orientation, but here now we are focusing on the active site. You see here large negative part where trypsin and urokinase have a positive part here, so they are quite similar. Remember, one is correlated, minus one is anticorrelated, zero is uncorrelated, and you see these are thrombin and trypsin are quite uncorrelated. Thrombin and urokinase, but and trypsin and urokinase are correlated. But if you focus more and more, you see trypsin and urokinase becoming more similar, but thrombin and trypsin and thrombin and urokinase are getting unsimilar. And if you go closer to the active site, taking just into account the grid points around the within a certain sphere, you have large anticorrelation between thormin and urokinase. Not so strong between thormin and trypsin, but high similarity in the electrostatic potential between trypsin and urokinase. So it's if you have a ligand, it's likely that it's difficult to have a specific ligand which is targeting just trypsin and not urokinase. But presumably you can find easier ligand which is targeting thrombin and not trypsin, or thrombin and not urokinase. So you can use also this for drug design and for having a specificity, and here you can see the distribution of the similarity index depending on the radius around the active site. Here, as I explained, trypsin urokinase is quite similar, but thrombin is also similar to, if you look to the whole protein, but closer to the active site, they become dissimilar. And so if you would dock, for instance, a ligand into the active site and try to predict the binding affinity, then it's probably quite difficult to get a selectivity between trypsin and urokinase, but between thrombin and trypsin. So, yeah, now the time is almost over. I want to thank all the people involved in this. It's not developed by me, the program, but mainly by my group leader, Rebecca Wade, and Rasif Gabdulin, and Niklas Blomberg. Stefan Richter implemented, he worked very much on this WebPipsa interface and how to do it for the internet. Matthias, a lot of slides and calculations were done by Matthias Stein. Ja, and this is our group in the at the Villa Bosch in Heidelberg, and so we are a multinational group. And of course, all the other groups of EML, Olga, we want to think about the collaboration and project and some internet addresses, but later in the tutorial you get more, you know, more about this, some publications. Yeah, and finally, I want to thank you for your attention, and I hope everybody is joining the tutorial. And if you have some proteins in mind, which you want to compare, come here with your PDB codes, maybe with your with already created models, with your SwissProt IDs, or some other ideas, and we can try to run simulations. Maybe not in this tutorial, because such a PIPSA one is running quite long, so maybe half an hour. So if 30 people would send a job, our server would be run for days, because it's just one job at the same time. But I will be here also the next 2 days, so maybe we can discuss further things. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for the nice presentation. And you can discuss with Stefan all the things regarding the PIPSA, and we will use it on the seminar. But we have a short coffee break. I think that in 15 minutes, and then we go to the seminar. Okay. Сегодня в 7:30 на футбольном поле университета будет футбол. Все желающие могут и поболеть, и поучаствовать между футбольной командой школьников и футбольной командой ИЦИК.
So how do you take that into account when you build correlation between kinetic parameters and your system?
In this workflow, you cannot keep into account.
But there, respectively, there are the points that you build correlation between only a different. You understand? Yes.
Yeah.
Conditions and they may mean nothing.
In the workflow, it's not possible. But if you use WebPipser or the standalone, there is more flexibility that you can set, for instance, iron concentration.
So you can add this as an additional kind of dimension to pull in the space where you put the points for correlation. Can you?
No, not really.
Can you at least modify your program?
If you need the temperature,
in chemical context, you need
For this, you can go.
You just put another dimension in your correlation space.
Света, вот по книжке, которая система биологии была, она продавалась.
Yeah, right. That's why I asked about solvent model, etc.
But you can build your model and use different ion settings and so on, and calculate your different pH, calculate your electrostatic potential, and use maybe a bound and motion. This is your molecule, and this is also done. Not in this workflow, not for pizza itself, but you can use for instance Brownian for the superoxide dismutase. It was shown by Hasif Gabrielin. And you can look for this name here. It's also Russian. It's the email. No, it's now
this one.
This is another point, because I would like to give the PDF here. Rebecca asked me to create a protective PDF that not all the figures are there. Can you create such a PDF? Acrobat Distiller, for instance.
I think all question you will solve this.
But I
ask him this PDF. Okay.
Yeah.
It's enough.
Yeah.
for me interesting to this addresses and so on. Okay, thank you.
As far as I understood, you used some program to predict the 3D structure of a protein in the homologs based on some reference structure, right?
Yeah. Okay.
What program did you use for that?
It's Modular.
It's the name of the program.
It's coming on the website later in the tutorial.
It's your program or
No. It's from Blandel. In the UK. But you can use also Swiss.
There are many programs as well.
In principle, you can use every tool, but then, of course, you have to supply.
Okay. And one more question. So, when you correlate genetical data with the distances between proteins, what kind of progression do you use?
So far, just plotting them based on the similarity.
I asked about what mathematics you use. So you predict them. You must have mathematical.
No, we don't predict the correct value. We show a similarity, and this gives us the similarity between the proteins, and this. Here, the black ones are known proteins, for instance. Proteins with known genetic data. Mm-hmm. And maybe we want to know the parameter for number 3. And at the beginning, we have 1, 2, 4, 5, and 6 kinetic. And now we want to see what is the closest neighbor. The closest neighbor maybe has the most.
But, so you just look with your eyes, but you actually can have a different situation. You can have a linear regression, or you could have a kind of a harmonical, hole, how is it called, particular harmonical potential. It is a usual thing for when you try to build partition for small derivations, right? You can have different models, and how do you know what. Suppose the point was here. Was it good? If it was quadratic potential, that's good. If it was linear, that's bad. How do you determine?
That's a typical point of view coming from the mathematical, informatical part.
What model do you have?
If you come from the experimental part, you know the error of such a property, Km value, for instance, is huge. If you measure it 10 times in 10 different labs, I'm sure you get 10 different values, so of course you can try to fit.
So you just leave it to the user to interpret the results.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay. And now...
Depending on the... sometimes maybe I show for Dido for late radicals, you screened all the literature for the... The KD value for the cofactor is not related to the similarity of the electrostatic potential, but of the substrate dido rate. It's good correlated, but of course you have outliers, maybe coming from, maybe not really outliers, maybe it's real thing, but maybe outliers from the experimental part, some not good modeled.
Did you try that situation that Vanisenko said about when different proteins have a singular structure? Yes, because it's interesting to know if the same function induces the same electrostatic potential map, the same structure, or the active side at least. That's right, or
It depends on your target. Sometimes it's right. Sometimes other properties like hydrophobicity could be more explaining your kinetic. If you have highly hydrophobic substrates, for instance, mm-hmm. the electrostatic potential is maybe not important for finding the the molecular.
They are highly correlated. Right, hydrophobicity and the electrostatics.
Yes, no. To some range, yes. If you have a hydrophobic region, you have no less electrostatic potential. It's not so clearly to see, so maybe you would better use dry probe within grid calculating this.
Can you choose in your program what physical chemical characteristics you want to use?
No, so far in this this version you trust the electrostatic potential, but if you use a standalone tool, if you download it, mm-hmm. you can use any grid as far as you can convert it.
I go here to for download.
Actually, not this is for a web website, but you can.
Okay.
If you go to our. You had also some questions?
Presentation.
We'll give the PDF file for this. At the moment, my group leader asked to use a PDF file where you cannot grab the figures out. I have to find out a way to create such a PDF file, but it will be available. I think it will be here on this CD or so of this summer school. I think there will be a CD with all the presentations.
No, flash. You give me, maybe.
I think every member here joining the summer school will get a CD with all the talks afterwards. There will be also
the site, in the internet.
I can put it also on our webpage, PDF file, but you will get it. I think at least on the CD here. Together. Together with the other.
Please, thank you.